Welcome to Careers Unwrapped, where we delve into real-life career stories from successful people who've been through it all, the ups and the downs. We'll get their raw, honest, actionable advice and be the careers talk they wish they'd had when they started out. As someone who has had a varied career, from soldier to salesman, expedition leader to entrepreneur, he knows firsthand that your career doesn't always lead you where you expect it to. Here's your host, Mark Fawcett.
So hello and welcome to Careers Unwrapped. I'm your host, Mark Fawcett, and with me today is Nicola Bird. Now, Nicola is the founder and also the managing director at Accel, and they're a leading construction training academy. So we're going to talk a bit about construction, a bit about lifelong learning and education as well. She spent over 15 years in construction, but she's also an award-winning entrepreneur. She's a CEO and she's a college lecturer. She's also been selected as one of the top 10 inspirational women in construction. So we'll hopefully be talking about how she's developed her career to sort of fulfill her own potential, how she's now committed sharing those lessons and also attracting a more diverse and wider breadth of talent into the construction industry. So Nicola, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So I think we'll start, because you've had a busy, busy career already, what led you into it? So what did you do out of school that started you on this path?
Well, out of school. So I went to a very academic school, girls' school. I didn't fit in, the truth be known. My sister, who now runs a business with me, she's the more academic one. I was the sporty one, but kind of always getting into trouble as well. I did buckle down in my last 2 years. The reason for that being that a couple of my mates got expelled, so I had no choice. I buckled down in the last 2 years and I got my GCSEs, which gave me a really good foundation. Didn't know what to do, so I did start my A-levels, but a few months into that, it flopped. And I left there and went to a local college to study beauty therapy. At this point, I'd met my now husband, got married very young, actually, got married at 19. And during that time, I was doing beauty therapy at college during the night. I was studying how to become a college lecturer. So I was doing my course in the day, and then in the night I was studying how to become a college lecturer. So once I'd actually completed my course, I was able to teach it in college, which was phenomenal. Weird when I look back at it, because I was, a college lecturer at the age of 19, teaching people that were older than me, which was kind of weird. And then that progressed, and then I owned a beauty salon. And it wasn't until I had my second daughter, actually, the age of 23, that I decided to come into construction. That wasn't for me. I needed some part-time work. And my dad, who owns a family firm in construction, offered me a part-time role in admin.
And so you started a lot young compared to other people. You were married younger than most probably are. You had your children, certainly younger than a lot of others. And you were a teenage college lecturer. What do you think now, looking back at that, gave you, I don't know, the confidence, the drive at that age when a lot of people are still really trying to find their way to make some decisions and take some of those pathways?
Well, my mum always said to me, so if I was going to drop out of my A-levels, I was going to go into beauty school. She was disappointed in that I was going to do that. Let's put it that way. And she looked me in the face and she said, well, fine, we'll let you do this. But if, when you do this, you be the top of the class and you do, you know, you be the best that you can be. So with that sort of warning, I did. And it was something that I enjoyed. It was something that I flourished at. And that gave me the confidence where I was okay at school, but was never really at the top of my game or could never be top of the class. I was always very average. This was something I was really good at. And I think when you find something that you're really good at, your confidence starts to grow.
And when you say good at, in terms of beauty therapy and the business of running a salon or a business, what are the bits of all of that that you're thinking of when you're saying I was good at it?
Well, just finding a subject that you enjoy and can get pleasure out of, compliments, success. When I did open my salon, it was the recession. So it was 2007. So would that be right? Yeah, 2007, 2008. So the salon was only really open for a year. And then the recession hit and beauty therapy was a luxury product which people couldn't afford. So, I had the experience of opening it, which was amazing young age. I even had an employee at the time. So, you know, learning how to take on employees, HR law and things like that. It was all a good learning curve, but ultimately it didn't go anywhere, but great experience.
Yeah. I mentioned when we were talking off air that my mother, when I was much younger, had set up one, then two, then three beauty salons. And so I'd seen her from a business perspective doing that. And I don't think it's a coincidence that all three of her sons then became people who set up and run their own businesses, because they saw their mother doing it. It was very natural, the conversations around business as well. Although I do recall one time she wasn't so happy with me when I borrowed, well, stole, probably be the truth of it, ear piercing gun, took it to school and pierced about 12 other boys' ears one break time. And I was not popular amongst other parents and the teachers, but I survived that school. So you did the beauty salon for a short period of time, but at the same time, you were a college lecturer. And what do you think were the skills or the strengths or the attributes you developed that gave you the confidence to, as you said, be a lecturer to people much older than you and probably a little out of the norm of what most of us expect when we think of a college lecturer?
Yeah, and I think that we put that down to people, and there have always been people in my career that have always said, oh, you could do this. And to be honest, it probably wouldn't have been something that I put myself forward for, thinking that, well, I didn't necessarily have the good experience. And that's why I wanted to own the salon. That's why I wanted to have some real industry experience that I could feed back to any of the students that I had. But yet the key thing of that was somebody giving me the opportunity and me kind of saying yes and just going for it. And that's pretty much what I've done my whole career.
And in terms of going for it then, let's leap forward to today, because you run Accel. Why don't you just give us a brief explanation of what that is?
So Accel is a construction school, and it's the UK first industry-led construction school. So it all started, it's an amazing facility here. We are co-funded by government to build it. So in 2020, when COVID struck, there was a pot of money made available through the Getting Building Fund, which I applied for. It was the first bid I'd ever done. And we were awarded 1.96 million, which my family business co-founded as well. And we built this brilliant school. So it's a school that does anything from apprenticeships to sort of a level 7 with site managers. So we see a varied degree of different personnel coming through the doors.
So who comes there and what sort of background and what are the students like?
And so our apprentices, for example, they come from anything from 16 to our oldest apprentice is 42. And he was not a postmaster and he wanted a change of career. And he's just literally just finished his endpoint assessment. And it's been life changing for him. Some of these stories that you see coming through, that's just one example. There's so many that I could reel off. But, you know, I've had opportunities in my life that have changed my life, and it's having those opportunities that I want to give to other people here.
And so from your perspective, both as someone who teaches in this area and who's been named as being very influential, what is the state of the construction industry in the UK? What's its health at the moment?
It's just old. You know, we've got so much experience out there, but the concern is there aren't enough young people wanting to take it up as an industry choice. And the longer we leave that, we're going to lose the experience and the knowledge without bringing the new ones in quick enough to replace them.
And what would your pitch then be if you were talking to a room full of, let's say, younger career starters, 16 to 24, 25 years old? What's your pitch to them to say why work in construction?
Well, everybody needs somewhere to live. We always need roads. We always need infrastructure. So a career in construction is never going to die out. There's always going to be the need for people in construction. And starting a trade as well. Everybody will own that or live in a house at some stage. Having a skill, having a trade is, you know, invaluable, because you can put that to use in your own property, or you can make it a career, or it's just... I always fall back on a trade, and I always say that. And I believe that for myself, because I go back to my beauty therapy days. Still now, Mark, I'm still doing beauty stuff for my family, because they won't go to anyone else. So even though I'm a CEO and blah, 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 they'll still put themselves in for waxing and other bits of treatment.
You mentioned waxing. Okay, I was going to ask, what are the treatments your family still get from you then?
Mainly waxing, yeah, because they don't want to go anywhere else to do that.
And back to sort of picking up a trade, from your perspective of seeing what people come to you to learn, but also from what the industry needs, what are the missing trades? Where do we really need more of in UK construction?
A bit of everything, if I'm really honest. The specialism we have here is groundworks and plant operations. Plant ops is something that sort of a generation died off, because a lot of people that went into plant operations started off within sort of agriculture sector. And people who went into plant operations were usually young farmers who were able to jump on plant and machinery in the fields and have a go. Of course, you know, the good thing with health and safety is we don't allow that anymore. But the bad thing about that is that people aren't allowed to practice and they don't go into those industries. So we lost a generation where people just weren't interested or were intimidated by plant operations. So that's one of them, but we've tried to overcome that here. Another one is groundworks. So all the infrastructure work that goes into the ground or to the sewers, the drainage, the roads, just because it's quite misunderstood.
Well, I guess for some, it's the less visible, less sexy even side of it, but it's the piece that, well, nothing else works without what's going underground, whether that's the foundations or the utilities under there.
If you don't get it right and it's not straight, then yeah, you're not going to go, it's going to look like the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
And you received some government funding for the school to set it up. Is that something you mentioned about the process going through to apply for it? Is that something that's in the form of a government loan? Are they a shareholder with you now, or do you have to pay it back? How does that actually work?
So it was a capital grant, and it's not payable back through outputs. So when we have a commitment for the next 10 years to ensure that we are pushing apprentices through, we are giving something back to the economy, and all that's measured quite strictly on our outputs. And to be honest, we're about doubling what we promised we would do in the first place, which is a huge success.
So the taxpayer is effectively buying from you a volume of apprenticeships and trained individuals in certain trades to go back into construction, UK PLC, as you know, as it's sometimes termed. And you're already exceeding, well, and very likely to exceed in total, what they asked for at the beginning.
The public will get their money back. The taxpayer will get their money back threefold by the end of this project, or the end of the 10 years that we're sort of tied in. But this was one of the first of its kind for public sector and private sector collaboration. So you've got the money from public sector, but you've got, and obviously that was co-funded. So 1.4 million our family business put in as well. And that merge of both sectors gave it the support, because we were told it's not private sector's responsibility to educate young people, but we do have a responsibility to the economy as a whole. And the private sector drive, you know, family businesses and small businesses, we've got to get things done. We move things fast. So the two and that collaboration has worked really, really well here. And we've got big sponsors, you know, like JCB, for example, who also invest in the project because they can see that it's really working, something we need desperately.
And so in between what we spoke about, first of all, the very young college lecturer, the beauty therapist and the business owner there, and now, how did you get into construction? Did you get your hands dirty on site? What built up your knowledge base that gave you the confidence to then say, right, I actually want to set up a learning environment. I want to set up Excel.
So I started right at the bottom within the business, in the offices, understanding what was what. I went into every department, just being nosy, probably sticking my nose in where it wasn't wanted in some points. And it was actually during that time that, so I was doing health and safety administration and training. And then I was going out onto sites and finding out why we were doing all this health and safety and training. And it was then when health and safety was really coming to a point where contracts were, it was a win or lose if you didn't really have a good health and safety background. So health and safety is where I thought the company needed me most. So I wanted to make myself as useful as I could. And I progressed a career in that. So I went to university part-time for 3 years. Again, sort of night school, had my two daughters at that time. And where I didn't think I was any good at education, it was a subject that I really liked. And 2017, I graduated with my master's. So, you know, I don't tell anybody who wasn't any good at school or didn't particularly like school, you can educate yourself later on in life when you find something you enjoy.
And I think what I just love within that is that somebody starting out might think, right, school, university, first job, career pathway, married, children. They might think quite conventional that way. And Nikki, you clearly went, oh, do you know what? Bit of school, but no. Now, actually set up my own business. Actually, now married and children. Now I'm going to go to university. Now I'm going to set up another business. And so taking the slightly more traditional route and throwing it all up in the air, I think it's really important because it does show to people it's not always the route you might think. You take the opportunities, you build your own opportunities, and you make your personal life come first. And it's something I find really interesting from a number of the people we speak to, but also really clear with you that very, very few people actually go down what people think as a traditional career route. So now that you're a chief executive, what are the lessons from your earliest years that you think you learned and have made you better now, whether that's your first leadership management role at the beauty salon, whether that's college lecturing? Can you think about what you've taken from those that make you better at your job now?
So when I started in the family business, I said I had to start right from the bottom. People said to me, your succession, you know, that you'll be taking on the business at some stage. Why are you bothering to go to university? And I always wanted to make sure that I was worthy. Being a family member, you have to prove yourself more than anything. Being a woman in construction, you have to prove yourself more than anything. So I really wanted to show that I knew my stuff. And that included, you know, experience and everything like that. Then I was made, after completing my qualifications, I was made director in 2018. I thought, what do I know about directing a business? You know, I know nothing about being a director. So again, I went on another course. So I've been on business programs, which has lasted another 3 years, to develop myself, to be able to lead people in the right way, to coach people, to really understand my numbers, understand my figures, you know, and goes back to, you know, about educating yourself every time. You don't know what you don't know. And I'm never fearful of telling people that I don't know something. And I will always try to seek out the answers or find out for myself. I've got to educate myself. Education is power.
Part of the education, as well as the formal courses that you've been on, is just the education learning that goes through just trying to do a job and seeing how it works out. What have been the fails along the way? The things that didn't work, which maybe at the time felt bad, but you've learned from after that?
Well, yeah, going back to dropping out my A-levels, that didn't work. You know, when I left school, yeah, I couldn't, you know, met people thinking, oh God, you know, what's she doing? Where's she going to go? And having a family at such a young age and getting married so young, and, you know, still married now, there's still a success. That one's still in the bag. I got that one. Well, I remember doing a construction course. This is for my very first health and safety qualification. And I failed that miserably because I hadn't had enough experience out on site. But I went back and did it again and passed the second time. So yeah, there have been a few failures along the way. But without doubt learn from those. And it just brings you back stronger.
You mentioned about the challenge at times of being a woman in construction. How has that manifested itself in reality in your life? Where have you found things thinking this is happening because I'm a woman or because of someone else's attitude towards me? What have you felt you've really had to overcome?
Oh, just being heard, I think, and having voice and opinions and having them being respected or just listened to. I do still think sometimes, you know, I'm still relatively young in the business sense. And so I still sometimes have my doubts. You know, there are so many people I can learn from that have been in there way more many years than I have. But it doesn't necessarily mean that my points and my views aren't valid. So it's trying to get people to see what I can see from a different perspective, because I bring something different. And the board I'm on, I'm the only one. There's 9 of us and I'm the only female. And of course, I'm going to bring in a different perspective. Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just something different.
And I read yesterday that the proportion of women in the broader construction industry, depending on who you get your numbers from, somewhere between about 13 and 16%. What's your experience with the education you're providing now at Accel? Is that the sort of level of students and learners coming to you, or is it different?
It's a lot less. You know, it is a massive, massive goal of ours to try and bring in more women. The challenge we have at the moment is still bringing in people. So regardless of whether male or female, and we still need people in the industry, it's hard enough trying to get still boys interested in it as a career. And the women will come. And the thing with what we're doing here, so it's run by my sister and I, and there's a, well, this 50-50 split, the team we've got here, which shows clear representation of diversity. And that's giving girls more opportunity to come here, and because they can see it and they can understand it and they can have those chats. So it's giving them just more of a choice. It's about having choices at the end of the day. I don't ever think we'll probably get to a 50-50 split. I think that's unrealistic, but we'd like to get somewhere around the 25-30% mark would be nice.
And now you also hold other leadership positions in construction bodies around South Wales and Gloucestershire. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your board memberships and chairs that you've done elsewhere?
I'm not doing it now, but I have been the chair of Working Well Together, which was in South Wales. That's a health and safety initiative run by the HSE. So again, that was something sort of really to get some more insight for my career. Again, speaking to the right people in the right places, again, gaining more knowledge and having a bigger network. I'm also, although they're wrapping up, a board member of the LEP, which is the local enterprise partnership. So after our huge success here, when actually before I had the funding, I never knew what an LEP was. And that would probably go for about 80% of members of the public as well. After that, I joined as a board member because I could see the value in what they gave back to the community. You know, it's transformed this local area. And I really wanted to be a part of something that could do more of that.
And in that, I'd like to touch a little bit upon leadership, because you're a chief executive, so you have to be a leader, but you've been a chair, which is a different form of leadership. And you've also been on boards, sometimes very male-dominated boards. So can you describe a little bit about perhaps your approach to being a leader and what you've learnt about leadership?
And I've been on a very kind of up and down journey, I guess, on my leadership journey, trying to understand who I am. I'm not a shouty person. So I was brought up in a family business that was run by two very, very strong males. And I always thought that if I was ever going to take on the business, I'd have to replicate that. I'd have to be strong. I'd have to be very direct to have any chance of being respected. And it was only till I really sort of started going on my own leadership journey and finding out who I was that I started to be more true to myself. Yeah, and I hate to say it, more like more woman than man as well, just being more me. And I actually started to get way more respect and way more out of my role. So I started to really understand that I could be more who I am. And that is very sort of democratic. I'm a coacher rather than a dictator.
We've met both types as well before.
I've tried both, and I'm much more suited in being true to myself than anything else. That comes with the challenges, because not being direct is not the best in business leader. So you've got to have a good balance. And that's something I've been working on, trying to be a little bit more direct with people, because some people want to be directed and they don't want to be coached and they don't want to have opinions. They want to come to work and they want to be told what to do. So you do have those mix of people. And for some people who want to come to work and be instructed on what to do, they find me really frustrated.
But you have an awareness of that. Do you adapt to that then with different people?
Yeah, I try to. And that's the best thing about having my sister here. So we're the complete opposites. We are yin and yang. And she does more of that part and I'll do more of the coaching part. So like any marriage, I suppose, we complement each other in those areas. So I'll be stronger on areas that she's not, and vice versa.
And in terms of what you're looking for next. So if I knew somebody who was thinking of construction and thinking I need to get some training or some experience, how do you go about now, especially in a time when health and safety is rightly much stronger, how do you go about actually getting a bit of work experience, a bit of a taster to see if construction is something you want to do as a career?
We offer that here. And the big thing that I wanted to do, because of the reasons you've just spoken about the difficulty of getting work experience in construction. So we've got a mock construction site here, which is one of our unique selling points, really makes us different. So as lovely it is to have the big flashy building, it's just a building, you know, there's buildings everywhere. But what we've got outside is a real construction site, plant on there, scaffolding on there, the old welfare and things like that. So it's real. So you can really experience what it is to essentially get your hands dirty on a construction site without having some of the barriers of getting on site. Because any school experience or work experience that's done in schools is quite frustrating because they allow you onto site because you're not allowed to touch anything, do anything because of all the restrictions. So do you really get a feel for what it is? Probably not. So if you do it here, it's more real.
And could I therefore just contact the college and say, I want to come and try something. I want to see what it's like. And you'll give them a bit of time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't really have many individuals doing that, but we do have school groups. So we'll have school groups more across the UK come in here and we'll do an experience day for them. And they'll experience anything from laying a couple of bricks to geo-mapping with drones and using some of the really high-tech technology we've got in the school. So they can see a varied degree of all the different opportunities, career opportunities there are in construction.
And it's something we haven't been able to have the time to touch on today, is about the whole application development of technology and how that is changing construction, which is a whole nother topic altogether. You mentioned your family, obviously, who have been very important, clearly, in your career development. But are there other people outside your family along the way who have been your helpers, your mentors, your champions, or even someone who just gave you a bit of spark of interest early on?
There are loads of people, but I'd be stupid not to mention my mum, and I know that's family again, but we are a really close family, to the point that her quote and her name is written on the walls of Excel. When I was really doubting myself when we were putting all this bid together for the funding, because I was so passionate about it and knew that we had to do this. And this was on the back of working with apprenticeships then for about 3 or 4 years, developing bespoke apprenticeships, and we had porter cabins and we were trying this, trying that. So I was really passionate about it, but kept doubting myself. And she wrote on a piece of cardboard, "Believe in me and I can achieve it." And I've got those quotes on the wall, because when she wrote that down for me, it was about an hour later and I was all in floods of tears thinking I couldn't do it. And an hour later, I had the phone call to say that I'd received the funding. So my mum's always believed in me, no matter what.
Wonderful. That's just great. I found our conversation so interesting, Nicola. I want to go on and on, really. But taking some of the highlights out of this, your career pathway that, you know, left school early, started a business early, college lecturer, then moved in to getting married, having children, going to university, then starting up this business. I think it's so interesting for career starters to give a perspective of, look, there are many different ways to tackle how I'm going to build my career. I think also what you've brought out very strongly is how strong a lifelong learning approach can be, because you've never really stopped learning, taking courses, picking up information, advice from others. And also, I think what you've said about leadership, in terms of you can be a strong leader in lots of different ways. You don't have to be the dominant, alpha, loud, strong leader. You can also just be strong through your confidence, your direction, through a coaching approach as well. So I think there's so much to take away from this conversation. And thank you so much for joining us. I have one final thing I always like to ask, which is, we want to keep passing along this baton of careers stories, careers experience. And if there was somebody else who you could suggest, who we could get on, who we could unwrap the career of, that might be an inspiration for other people trying to find their way, doesn't matter what industry or sector they're in, but is there somebody else who you think you should get on, speak to them?
Yeah, so I've got a really good friend of mine. His name's Mark Stewart. So their business is Stewart Golf, and they invent electrical golf trolleys. Well, his dad started the business. He's taken it over. But yeah, during COVID, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal that the two things that you couldn't get hold of in the US were golf trolleys and hand sanitizer. So during COVID, his business like quadrupled, and it's a huge success. And so he's based in Gloucestershire, and it's a great British brand that should be celebrated. And he's just an entrepreneur and engineer of excellence.
Okay, Mark Stewart, that's fascinating, because this has turned into a real Gloucestershire episode, because you're in the Forest of Dean, I'm recording from Southern Gloucestershire, and Mark Stewart's in Gloucestershire as well. But you are free to listen, by the way, from anywhere else in the UK, but a shout out to Gloucestershire here. Nicola, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really interesting, and I think very thought-provoking for other people starting out in their careers too. And go construction, there are a huge amount of opportunities there. Nicola, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by We Are Futures. To find out more about We Are Futures and how we can introduce your brand, business or organisation to the mass markets of tomorrow, visit www.wearefutures.com. Make sure to search for Careers Unwrapped in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts or anywhere else podcasts are found. Remember to click subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at We Are Futures, thanks for listening.